Deva Surivaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 61, Lord Balaram Slays Rukmi. We'll be doing texts 4 through 6 today. Okay, we'll chant 6 together. So let's just read through 4 and 5 together. Smayavaloka lavadarshita bhavahari Brumandala prahita sharata mantra shaudai Hatyastu shodasa sahasram anangabana Yashendriyam vimuhitam karanayasheku. The arched eyebrows of these 16,000 queens enchantingly express those ladies' secret intentions through coyly smiling sidelong glances. Thus their eyebrows boldly sent forth conjugal messages. Yet even with these arrows of Cupid, and with other means as well, they could not agitate Lord Krishna's senses. Text 5. Itam rama patim avapya patim striyasta Brahma dayopi navidu parivim yadiyam Vejur muda viratamedityanuraga Asavaloka navasangamalala sadhyam. Thus these women obtained as their husband the master of the goddess of fortune, although even great demigods like Brahma do not know how to approach him. With ever-increasing pleasure, they felt loving attraction for him, exchanged smiling glances with him, eagerly anticipated associating with him in ever-fresh intimacy, and enjoyed in many other ways. Purport, this text describes the intense conjugal attraction the queens felt for Lord Krishna. And we'll do text 6. Pratyugamasana varaha parashocha. Repeat. Tambula vishramana vijana gandamalyai. Kesha prasara shayana snapano paharyai. Dashi shata api vibhor viradhu smadashyam. Prajugamasana vararharana parashocha. Ambula vishramana vijana gandamalyai. Kesha prasara shayana snapano paharyai. Dashi shatapi vibhor viridhu smadashyam. Prajugamasana vararhana parashaucha. Tambula vishramana vijana gandamalyai. Kesha prasara shayana snapano paharyai. Dashi satapi vibhor viridhu smadashyam.
Shayana Sapano Aharyai.
Kesha Prasara Shayana
Pratyugamasana varaha kamasana chan.
Tambula vishramana vijana gandhamayai.
Yeshaprasara shayanam snapanopahayai.
Ladies, students. Thank you. Pratyudgama, by approaching. Asana, offering a seat. Vara, first class. Arhana, worship. Pada, his feet. Shaucha, washing. Tambula, offering betel nut. Vishramana, helping him to relax by massaging his feet. Vijana, fanning. Gandha, offering. Fragrant substances. Malyai, and flower garlands. Kesha, his hair. Prasara, by dressing. Shayana, arranging his bed. Snapana, bathing him. Upaharyai, and by presenting gifts. Dasi, maidservants. Shata, having hundreds. Api, although. Vibho, for the Almighty Lord. Vidithusma, they executed. Dasham, service. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Although the Supreme Lord's queens each had hundreds of maidservants, they chose to personally serve the Lord by approaching him humbly, offering him a seat, worshiping him with excellent paraphernalia, bathing and massaging his feet, giving him pan to chew, fanning him, anointing him with fragrant sandalwood paste, adorning him with flower garlands, dressing his hair, arranging his bed, bathing him and presenting him with various gifts. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that Shukadev Goswami is so eager to describe these glorious pastimes of the Lord with his queens that he has repeated these verses. That is, text 5 of this chapter is almost identical with text 44 of the 59th chapter in this canto, and text 6 is identical with text 45 of that chapter. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that the term Vararhana, excellent offerings, indicates that the queens offered the Lord palmfuls of flowers, Pushpanjali, and palmfuls of jewels, Ratnanjali. Om Jnana Timurandasya, Gananjana Salakaya, Chakshur Nitamina, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha, Panchakopa Trubhascha, Kripa Sindhavyebhascha, Patitano Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavyebhyo, Namo Namaha. So it's mentioned that these are actually repeated verses from the end of chapter 59. Text 5, I think, only has one line different, and text 6 is identical to the other verse. So obviously these were important verses and important concepts that Shukadeva Goswami wanted to communicate. And so if we look at especially these texts 5 and 6, we can understand what is being conveyed and what instructions and what lessons there are for us in understanding the actions and behaviors of the queens in Dwarka. In text 5, Krishna is very attentive to his queens. There's loving exchanges between them, but Krishna acts also very much in reciprocal relationship with them. Now, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's purport to that particular verse, he gives many examples of how Krishna is very attentive to the queens. And he quotes different verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam about how Krishna took the Parijata tree from Indra and offered it to Satyabhama. Another verse where Krishna says he cannot sleep at night thinking of Rukmini. And another verse saying that being enchanted with his wives, Krishna finds it very difficult to leave his palaces. So in many ways, Krishna acts almost not, we couldn't say an ordinary husband. Obviously, no one is an ordinary husband who has, 16,108 wives and all of these palaces and incredible wealth. And so it's certainly, there's nothing ordinary in that sense. But we could say that he acts as a very dutiful husband under these circumstances might act in a very, very wonderful, loving relationships with his different queens. But then we go to text 6, and it's a little bit different mood. In that mood, the queens are in this very much a loving, devotional mood of service to Krishna, and in fact, even acting as menial servants to Krishna and trying to provide everything for him. Of course, we can imagine the incredible wealth that they had. They each had their own palace, and Krishna, of course, is the source of all wealth, and these queens are all expansions of the goddess of fortune. So what? There's no shortage. There's no lacking whatsoever. And it's described that they had hundreds of maidservants, every single one of them. So you wouldn't think they'd have a whole lot they'd have to do. They're just going to have the maidservants running around doing everything. But no, actually, what they did is they took personal charge of the service to Krishna. Because this is the nature of the devotee. This is the relationship. The relationship of the devotee is one of service to Krishna. And one wants to serve the Lord in many, many ways as are being described in these verses. It's also described that they wanted to offer the best articles of worship to the Lord. So in other words, it's saying they're offering jewels or offering flowers, but not just any flowers or any jewels, but the absolute best that was available. Because that is the mood of the devotee, that we want to offer the very best. Whatever we have, whatever there is of any value, that should be given to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see this loving reciprocation between Krishna and his devotees. Krishna is very attentive to his queens. He's very loving, this very wonderful relationship with him. And their mood is simply to serve him all of the time. And so we see this example of great devotees of the Lord that they have this mood of service. So I was wondering if anyone can think of any examples like this, where someone may have had great wealth or opulence or position, but yet still offered very humble service to Krishna, despite that position. Can you think of any other examples? Any of the kids? Yes. Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, he didn't have so much wealth, but he certainly had a lot of other opulences that he offered everything to Krishna. Any other examples? Yes. Is that? Srila Guru Dev, yes, yes. The spiritual masters are always offering everything to Krishna. Can you think from the Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, any examples of, you know, like here we see the queens of Dwarka. They have thousands of maid servants and all this wealth, but they're personally serving Krishna. Any other examples of this? Yeah. Rukmini, yeah, absolutely. She did. Any others? Anything? How about in Vrindavan? Yes. Radharani, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mother Yashoda. Did Mother Yashoda have much wealth? She actually did. Sometimes we think of them as being simple cowherd men and women, but remember we say Maharaj Nanda? He was the king. He was the king of all the cowherds. They actually had, and she had many servants. So they had all kinds of wealth. But what did the Mother Yashoda do? Did she have all her servants go and churn the butter for Krishna and take care of everything for Krishna? What'd she do? She did it herself, right? Why was Mother Yashoda? She had all these servants. She's churning the butter. She's churning the butter because she wants it to be the best, right? She wants to make sure that the butter is just as good as possible as it can be to offer to baby Krishna. So this is the mood of the devotee, that they want to give everything personally to Krishna. Any other examples? Yeah.
King Bali.
King Bali. That's a very good example. He is actually the exemplar of the process of devotional service of, you know what it's called? Of giving, offering everything to Krishna? Isn't it? Atmani Vedana. Yeah, Bali's example of Atmani Vedana, giving everything to Krishna. And he was, of course, you know, he was actually in charge of all the planets. He had defeated all the demigods, so, I mean, he was in charge. He was in charge of the whole universe. There's a couple other great kings like that. Any other ideas? Go ahead.
Maharaj Ambarish.
Maharaj Ambarish, great example. Can you tell us something about Maharaj Ambarish? What did he do? We know he was like king of Bharatvarsha, you know, he was a great king, but you remember anything about his service? You remember the nine process of devotional service? Which one did Maharaj Ambarish do? Do you remember?
All
of them. Maharaj Ambarish did all of the service. He had very elaborate deity worship. And did he hire a bunch of Brahmins to take care of him, take care of the deities? No. Well, he may have, but he personally took care of the deity, right? He personally did devotional service, and he did very, very wonderful service in the temple, the deities, even though he had incredible wealth. And he performed all the nine processes of devotional service. Karanga.
King Yudhishthira?
Hmm?
King Yudhishthira?
Yudhishthira. Who? Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira, yeah, of course. Yeah, these are all great examples of great devotee kings, people who had so much wealth and power. Okay, a couple more, then we'll wrap it up. Go ahead.
King Ramakrishna.
Okay, any others?
Sri
Go ahead.
Arjuna?
Yeah. Can anyone think of anyone from Chaitanya Leela? A king or anything? Somebody?
Ramananda Roy.
Ramananda Roy. He was very powerful and rich. He was sort of like the, I don't know what they call them, the viceroy. Anyway, he was like kind of like second in charge under the king. Who else? King Prataparudra. King Prataparudra was the king of Jagannath Puri. And what did he do? What menial service did he do? Swept the road in front of Lord Jagannath, and then didn't he also massage Lord Jagannath's legs? Yeah, so we see these examples that... Okay, one more.
Chaitanya.
I can't hear.
The Chaitanya.
Okay, all right. There's actually so many. We could go on and on. Because every time we see these great Rajarshis or devotee king, we see the same thing, that they're all wonderful devotees. They're offering so much devotional service, even though they have wealth, power, whatever it may be. Okay, that's enough on those. So this is the idea, that devotees are engaged in service. Sometimes we think of the dasya ras being associated with service, but actually all rasas contain dasya within them. As we go to the different higher stages of rasa, so it's not just if a person has more money or wealth or position, but we might also look at those who are in more increasingly intimate relationships with Krishna. Here we have examples, of course, of the gopis or the queens of Dwarka who are in this topmost Madhurya rasa, but yet they are still offering menial service to Krishna. So this idea of service underlies all relationships, right? So in other words, it's not that one gets to a certain position, one feels very familiar with Krishna or intimate with Krishna. And even if one is in a more intimate relationship, like one of a friend or in a conjugal relationship or as the parent, the underlying mood of service is always there to Krishna. So the greatest devotees are the greatest servants. I mean, that's something that we know and we learn from Srila Prabhupada. It's not that if one is a great devotee, then one becomes, I am now master and controller of all I survey. No, if one becomes a more advanced devotee, one becomes a bigger servant, is able to wanting to serve more and more and taking a more increasingly humble position. That's the nature of the devotee. So sometimes while we're in this material world, it may seem difficult for us to see how do we enter into these relationships of service. Because after all, the queens of Dwarka, I mean, you say, okay, yeah, I mean, if Krishna was there, if I was in the palace with Krishna, I could see I could be doing all the service for him. But most of us, at least, I myself, we don't see Krishna so much directly face to face. We don't have this personal relationship yet. We're trying to develop that relationship. But at this point, we don't really see Krishna in a way that we can serve like the queens of Dwarka or Mother Yashoda or King Prataparudra. So how do we, of course we know that we can chant Hare Krishna, we can read the scriptures, we can do so many different types of service, but how do we personally serve the Lord? Yes.
By chanting the holy name.
Chanting the holy name, yeah. How else? What sort of way can we personally interact and relate with Krishna? Any other ideas? Yeah. Offer prasadam, yeah. Go ahead, somebody, go ahead. Go to the temple, yeah. Yes?
Nine
processes. Yeah, I think that's what we're sort of getting the idea of this. There's so many different processes of devotional service. But I want to focus a little bit on ways that we can actually more feel that sense of personally serving. Because sometimes even chanting can seem a little abstract. I mean, unless we're very advanced and we're completely realizing the identity of the holy name and the Lord himself, it can seem a little bit theoretical. Sometimes we're going to the temple, we're doing all these things. So how do we actually experience our relationship with Krishna? You know, particularly when, you know, we don't see Krishna face to face. I was thinking there's some different ways that we can do this. First of all, we serve Krishna through serving the devotees. That's something that we actually can do personally, you know, that we have personal relational experience with. And of course, amongst amongst the idea of serving the devotees, most specifically, of course, is serving the guru. We serve the spiritual master, we serve the other devotees. This is very personal service that we can render. And then another idea I want to talk about later, so we also serve Krishna through his deity form. If we're not able to, you know, all of these things that we hear that the queens were doing, bathing him, massaging his feet, offering him food, fanning, we do all of these things with the deity form of the Lord, right? It's, in other words, from the spiritual perspective, there's no difference. There's a difference. There is and there isn't, you know. Chinta Beda Beda Tattva. But it's really the same idea, the same principle of what the queens are doing in Dwarka, doing this personal service to the Lord, as when we are serving Krishna on the altar. So, in other words, Krishna is so kind that he gives us these opportunities for personal service, even before we're at the advanced stage of being able to personally see him and relate to him. So, first I want to talk a little bit about serving the devotees. While we're in the material world, our relationships tend to be mostly with other human beings, naturally. We tend to think of our relationships often with one another and with different people. And just as there is affection in families because there's common parents and relatives, there's a natural affection that's there in families. We should also understand that we are part of Krishna's family. Krishna is the common father. We are all the sons and daughters. We are all spirit souls. So we're all related in that relationship with Krishna. And so devotees experience the spiritual protection and love in that relationship as we take shelter of other devotees. So that's one way, and not only do we relate with those devotees, but we serve those devotees. We serve one another, and that's a way that we can understand the process of service. Of course, sometimes we find many people work in the material world, or they have different relationships. We find ourselves amongst non-devotees as well. I mean, of course, those of you who go to school here at the Bhaktivedanta Academy, and your family and parents may be devotees, so you may be mostly associating with devotees. But the majority of people are still non-devotees. We'll change that eventually, but right now the majority of people are non-devotees, and we associate with them. So how do we do that? I think there's an important concept, and I think often young people need to remember this, because sometimes it's a little confusing. How do I relate to devotees and non-devotees, and what are these people out here doing, and that seems attractive, and this and that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who actually is a wonderful example, because he worked at, you know, he had an outside job, right? He was working as a magistrate, as a judge. You know, he was working within the material world as a judge, although he's a pure devotee, raising his family, everything else. And what he said is, the way that we associate with non-devotees is we do not repose our affection there. We don't give our heart. You save that, your heart, your affection, those close relationships for devotees. It's actually very simple. You know, we have relationships, non-devotees, but we don't give our heart. Our close relationships, our familiarity, that we reserve to our family of devotees. And that way we stay very safe, and we're able to take shelter of devotees like that. And that protects us. And I find that if devotees kind of move into where they're really giving more and more of their heart, or giving more of their association and their sangha and all of that, but non-devotees, then the tendency, unless we're very, very strong, the tendency is to become, I don't want to use the wrong word, but influenced by that association, and tend to take on those qualities. Rather, what our relationship with non-devotees should be is what? What is our relationship with non-devotees generally? What do we want to do with? Do we just say they're awful and we don't like them? No. What? Very good. Thank you. Yes. We want to show compassion to the non-devotees by engaging them in devotional service, by preaching to them, by helping them to become Krishna conscious. That's the way that we relate in that way. You know, it's not that, you know, we dislike them or despise them, we think we're better than, no. And by the way, we're not better than them. We're more fortunate. Remember that. We're more fortunate. We're fortunate that we've had Srila Prabhupada's mercy and the mercy of the Lord and have been given devotional service. And so the compassion of the devotee is to want to make others fortunate. So that's our relationship with the non-devotees. We want to help them to become fortunate also in gaining devotional service. So that's also part of how we serve the Guru. We can serve the Guru personally when the Guru is present. But when the Guru is not present, for those of us who are Srila Prabhupada's disciples, it's been 40 years, not quite 40 years, almost 40 years since Srila Prabhupada has not been with us, 38 years. So we serve the mission of the Guru. We serve the instructions of the Guru, and that's the same. It's non-different, the Vani, the Vapu. The instructions of the personal worship of the spiritual master is equal. In fact, Prabhupada often emphasized the words and the instructions even more than personal association. You know, because actually there were many devotees who had great amounts of personal service with Srila Prabhupada. They may have traveled with him, served him, and many of them left. No, I shouldn't say many, but some. And some of them left Krishna consciousness. You know, but those who understood the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and continue to understand those instructions, they remain as faithful servants of the Guru. So, Prabhupada created this ISKCON society to serve both the devotees internally and for the non-devotees. So there are two broad purposes of this ISKCON society. One is a place for devotees to associate together, to spiritually advance, to provide for the spiritual needs of the devotees. Prabhupada said in one of his purposes of ISKCON is a place to bring the members together for the worship of Krishna. It's a place for association, a place to have spiritual strength, a place to take shelter. And secondly, as a preaching missionary organization to benefit all of humanity. Because an organization was needed, required to fulfill the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So to carry out Lord Chaitanya's instruction and the instructions of the predecessor acharyas, Srila Prabhupada came, and he not only preached and he followed the orders of his guru and Lord Chaitanya, but he created a society, an institution, an organization that would continue this work and continue the work all over the world even after he left. So that was his idea. So in that way, we're able to have strong relationships with both devotees and non-devotees. We have relationship with our spiritual master. And this way, we're able to serve in a very personal way. So even though we may not, you know, be personally seeing Krishna before us, you know, we have the presence of the Guru, we have the presence of the sadhus, the presence of the devotees that we can serve, and we can gain that relationship. Okay. And I just want to say a few things about service to the deity. Because Krishna in his kindness comes in the Archavigraha form. And he comes in such a way that we can give this personal service to Krishna. The Nectar of Devotion, chapter 9, talks about the benefits of deity worship. And there's some different quotes. Naradiya Purana says, "The person who has once offered respects, bowing down before the deity, will not come back to this world because he will go directly to the abode of Krishna." That's a pretty good offer. Come and offer your respects to the deity and go back to Godhead. There might be a few steps in between, but the basic idea is eventually you're going to make it because your devotional service has begun once you've offered your respects to the deities. And the Hari Bhakti Sohudaya says, "Persons who are impelled by pure devotional service and Krishna consciousness and therefore go to see the deities of Vishnu in the temple will surely get relief from entering again into the prison house of this material world." So, why do we need deity worship? Deity worship is there for the purification of the senses. Srila Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 77-76, "Although it is correct that one who fully engages in chanting the holy name may not depend upon the process of initiation, generally, a devotee is addicted to many abominable material habits due to material contamination from his previous life. In order to get quick relief from all of these contaminations, it's required that one engage in the worship of the Lord in the temple. The worship of the deity in the temple is essential to reduce one's restlessness due to contaminations of conditioned life. In other words, our mind becomes controlled. Since every conditioned soul has bodily concept of life aimed at sense enjoyment, to restrict the sense enjoyment, the rules and regulations for worshiping the deity in the temple are essential. One other. It's therefore recommended that initiated devotees follow the principles of the Narada Pancharatra by worshiping the deity in the temple, especially for the household devotees who are opulent material possessions. I haven't met too many of those, but anyway, there are some household devotees who are opulent material possessions. The path of deity worship is strongly recommended. An opulent household or devotee who does not engage his hard-earned money in the service of the Lord is called a miser. So in today's verse, it's mentioned by Vishvamacharya Thakura that when the queens were making their offerings to Krishna, they were offering the very best of everything, the best flowers, the best jewels. So if we don't offer the very best of everything to Krishna and to the deities, then we are misers, and we don't want to be misers. That's not a good thing. No. So what's the word, kripana? Often used, kripana, means miserly. And that's not a good thing. We want to be broad-minded. We want to be generous of heart and spirit. We want to, everything that we have, we want to offer to Krishna, offer the best. And so we see that Krishna has the best flowers, has the best clothing, the best food. Everything best is offered to him. Right. Sometimes people ask, is deity worship absolutely necessary? We're a preaching movement. What about Bhagavad Marg? All that. Prabhupada explains that there's two processes, the Pancharatrika Vidhi and the Bhagavad Marg. The Pancharatrika is the deity worship, and the Bhagavad Marg is based upon the Bhagavatam principles of hearing and chanting. The simple answer is both are needed. Prabhupada described them as two parallel tracks, that both are needed to advance in Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavatam 4.13.2, Srila Prabhupada says, there are two different ways of approaching the Supreme Lord. One is called Bhagavat Marg, or the way of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the other is called Pancharatrika Vidhi. Pancharatrika Vidhi is the method of temple worship, and Bhagavat Vidhi is the system of the nine processes beginning with hearing and chanting. The Krishna conscious movement accepts both processes simultaneously and thus enables one to make steady progress on the path of realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, 4.13.2. And Prabhupada continues, 4.24.25 purport, no one can worship the Lord in the Bhagavad Vidhi without going through the regulations of the Pancharatrika Vidhi. Radha Krishna cannot be approached by the neophyte devotees, therefore temple worship according to regular principles is offered to Lakshmi Narayan. Although there may be Radha Krishna Vigraha or form, the worship of the neophyte devotees is acceptable as Lakshmi Narayan worship. That's a whole other concept, kind of throwing in there, that that Krishna actually accepts for the more neophyte devotees worship as Lakshmi Narayan, which means we're worshiping in this mood of awe and veneration, of great opulence, you know, not in a very simple, intimate way, but in offering, you know, very elaborate, very opulent worship. So deity worship is not just for neophyte devotees. It's not. It is described that the Kanishtha Adhikari only sees Krishna in the deity form, but that doesn't mean that the advanced devotee doesn't see Krishna in the deity form. It just means that the advanced devotee also sees Krishna in the devotees and ultimately everywhere. But we see this deity worship as being very, very important throughout our sampradaya, throughout our line. Lord Chaitanya's instructions to the six Goswamis, of course, we're to write books and expound the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but also to establish temples, to establish the places of pilgrimage, to establish the temple worship. And of course, we have the prominent main temples in Vrindavan to this day, those that were established by the six Goswamis. This was that important. Lord Chaitanya personally went to see the Jagannath deity every day and fully understanding that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see many different pastimes of the intimate relationships the devotees have with the deity. We had the disappearance of Madhavendra Puri the other day, and I was gave that class, and I was reading through some of those pastimes, and there were three different occasions at least three that I can think of, the Madhavendrapuri was directly instructed by this deity, you know, in dreams or personally. The deity came to him and instructed him. You know, so great devotees have these wonderful, intimate relationship with the deity of the Lord. So it's not that, you know, they go off, abandon the deity, and they're just, you know, off in a cave somewhere necessarily. They can be, if that's what Krishna wants. But they understand that Krishna is identical with the deity. So if Krishna is there, if Krishna is there in the deity form in the temple, obviously, why would we not want to see him? Why would we not want to worship him? So this is Krishna's great kindness, that he comes in these different ways. He comes in the Archivigraha form so that we can see him and serve him. Krishna also comes, sends the sadhus, the great devotees, the spiritual masters that we can render service to. And also, you know, Krishna gives us the association of devotees, that we can also serve one another and serve the devotees in that way that we can make spiritual advancement. And all of these are ways that we can understand personalism. We can understand personal relationships, and we can understand personal service. It's not otherwise, you know, our tendency is towards being impersonal in this material world. You know, this is the land of Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, personalism, voidism. The tendency is to, you know, think, you know, it's just like somehow me and God or my spiritual life or, you know, probably made very clear. He says there's no such thing as self-realization without realization of Krishna. There's relationship. We can't understand, and we don't understand our relationship with Krishna in a vacuum. Krishna is always surrounded by his devotees, by his associates, by his paraphernalia, his pastimes. Everything is going on. So if we learn to serve the devotees, we learn to serve the guru, we learn to serve the deity form, this is preparation. This teaches us, that mood of service teaches us how we will serve Krishna, the right mood of serving Krishna when we do go back to Godhead, back to the spiritual world, and have that personal relationship. Okay, I'll stop at that point. Are there any other questions? Comments? Anything else?
Prabhupada says that even though deity worship is supposed to be in Dwapara Yuga, but the Paramahansas, great devotees, they saw the people malicious nature, that they did not respect the advanced devotees in order to protect their society, protect their faith, they install the deity worship. And Prabhupada, in the parable, Prabhupada says, this is the beginning, even though in Treta Yuga there was no deity worship. But the pure devotee, they are merciful, so they established deity worship.
Yeah, that's a good point, even though it's not really the Yuga Dharma, which of course is the chanting of the holy name. But yeah, the Prabhupada's saying that's, again, for that further purification. And because it is Kali Yuga, you know, we need all the help we can get for purification of the heart. And specifically, Prabhupada talks about that, how we're able to engage the senses. Because the senses and the mind are so impure, it's a way to repose that, to engage the senses, you know, so that they can become purified.
Yeah. Still another point that Kapil Dev made, that worshipping deity but not respecting my devotees, I do not accept. And Prabhupada emphasized the whole purport that how worshipping deity and respecting devotees also important side by side.
Yeah, that's the Kanishtha platform. And the Majjhima platform not only understands Krishna in the deity form, but also appreciates the devotees and serves the devotees. Yeah. Madame Mahan?
I was remembering how Prabhupada said that when we worship the deity, it's always accompanied by the chanting of the Hare Krishna. So that's like we have our kirtan for the deities from like 7:30 to 5:08, which is the congregational, all the congregation comes together. And I've noticed specifically when you're chanting, ordinarily you may not associate with the same people, because just like Pran Govinda Prabhu was just saying about you respect the deities, but you don't respect each other. Mm. And that's like compared to offering the fire sacrifice to ashes. You know, any causes of fear of death for anyone who makes the least discrimination. But when you're all chaining together, all that disappears. You know, you're chaining with everyone that, and in that mood of chaining before the deities with everyone, that takes us to that other platform.
Very nice. Thank you. Okay. Jai Al Guru Srila Prabhupada.